Welcome to The Technology Pill, a podcast that looks at how technology is reshaping our lives every day and exploring the different ways that governments and companies use tech to increase their power. My name is Gus Hossain, and I'm the Executive Director at Privacy International.
Oh, and I'm Caitlin, I'm PI's Campaigns Officer. Hello.
Welcome to this day, Caitlin. And here today, we're very, very fortunate to have our colleague, Laura.
Hi, everyone. My name is Laura Lazaro Cabrera, and I am a Senior Legal Officer at Privacy International.
This week, we're talking about government surveillance in Colombia, specifically the surveillance of journalists and human rights defenders. Laura, do you want to explain who we're talking to, why we're talking to them, and why PI is involved?
We're talking to Emmy and Claudia Duque. So Emmy is a Colombian lawyer defending press freedom who has chosen to remain anonymous for the purposes of this recording and is using a pseudonym. So Emmy is not his real name. And Claudia is a human rights defender and a journalist who's been exercising her profession for over 25 years and has been reporting on crimes having occurred during the armed conflict in Colombia. And her work has been instrumental in shedding light on practices by the government and also helping to bring some measure of accountability in these cases. PI has historically worked in Colombia where we have two fantastic partners, Fundación Carisma and De Justicia. And through their work, we've come to know the landscape and the actors in Colombia quite well, as well as the importance of the role of human rights defenders in supporting the traditional justice process. While we're involved specifically in this specific case, we're keen to investigate the arguments used to legitimize surveillance in sensitive contexts. And of course, we're keen to know what happens in Colombia and how the privacy landscape shapes up in coming years.
So we've spoken to Emmy and Claudia, audio that you'll hear in a minute. They're involved in this court case around the surveillance that Claudia has endured. Can you explain what the court case is?
The court case is about Claudia challenging the use of a GPS tracker in an armored car that was provided by the Colombian National Protection Unit. Our speakers will tell you more about what this is, but in essence, the National Protection Unit is the entity in charge of providing human rights defenders with protective measures once they've proved to the unit that they're at risk for their work. Now, Claudia found out that without her consent, a GPS tracker had been fitted into the armored car that she was using, and that data had been recorded by this GPS tracker that she never even knew about until she had detailed exchanges with the National Protection Unit about the measures that were used to protect her. So Claudia has brought a case against the National Protection Unit after having challenged directly with them the use of this GPS tracker and asked for its removal. What the National Protection Unit has said so far is that they can't have one without the other. They can't provide her with an armored car and that she agrees to have her data subjected to GPS tracking. And that's what the case is investigating and discussing.
Laura, can I just ask a background question, just because I'm coming at this specific case fresh? The first time I traveled to Colombia to work with our phenomenal partners, we were running events with others in the not-for-profit sector. And at one of the events, this individual walks in and he's wearing a stab vest and he's surrounded by two very burly individuals. I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea who this person was. And lo and behold, we end up speaking with this individual, and he was a journalist. And this journalist was being targeted, and they couldn't even declare who was targeting him. It was probably a mix of government officials and corporate officials. And he was surrounded by these two individuals who were issued to him by the state to protect him from attack. Now, for us living in non-Colombia-like environments, this kind of blows your mind that when we talk about journalists being under attack, it's usually they are embarrassed, they are shamed, they are sometimes prosecuted. But in Colombia, their lives are on the line. And so that was an eye-opening situation. But what you're describing, from my understanding, is the question around those two burly individuals who were what is called the National Protection Force. Is that the picture?
You're correct. Actually, stab vests and bodyguards are measures that the National Protection Unit can provide to protect human rights offenders and or journalists. And as you rightly point out, in Colombia, you can never really be sure where the threat is coming from. You just know that it is coming based on the type of work.
And it's a threat to life.
Exactly.
And in fact, the reason Claudia got protection from the National Protection Unit is she had explicit threats to her life. She had several very scary instances happen, some of which seemed to have been predicated on the GPS information that was in the armored car that the National Protection Unit were providing her. So she has very real and specific reasons to be afraid for her life. Like, it goes far beyond a dangerous environment for journalists, of course, which there is, to specific people have rung me up and said, I'm coming to kill you, which is terrifying.
So Laura, how did this come together?
Well, we were contacted by an intermediary organization that flagged Claudia's case to us. While we didn't have the opportunity to intervene in the case, we wanted to shed light on this practice as we thought it might be relevant elsewhere and of broader interest to the public.
And so as you and the listeners know on this podcast, we don't cover topics just because they're interesting. And the examples we use are actually quite complicated and nuanced and require nuance. So I'm curious, why is this an important case?
There are two key things that are worthy of an in-depth analysis here, I think. And first, it's the fact that the entity that is carrying out the surveillance in this case is an entity that is meant to protect the interests of human rights defenders like Claudia. They hold themselves out as being in existence just to protect people who are looking to defend human rights. And so it's very important that we look at those efforts very, very closely whenever there is an allegation that they're not doing their job as they should. And the second thing which makes this case very interesting is the justification used by the National Protection Unit. They are saying it's necessary to carry out the GPS tracker surveillance for Claudia's safety, regardless of the fact that she never consented and she was never asked about it when these measures were being implemented.
Oh, this is just fascinating. I can't wait to get into this. Let's pass over to Emmy and Claudia to hear more.
My name is Claudia Duque. I am a Colombian journalist working on human rights issues in Colombia.
And I am Emmy, a lawyer defending press freedom in Colombia.
Thank you both for joining us. Emmy, your work focuses on protecting press freedom. Can I maybe ask you to set the scene, lay out some of the background on the current situation?
Yes. So Colombia is one of the most dangerous countries for working as a journalist in Latin America and globally. According to the monitoring by the Colombian press watchdog Fundación para la Libertad de Prensa, FLIP, two journalists were killed in retaliation for their work in 2022, and 246 received threats against their life and integrity. And Colombia is also the deadliest country for human rights defenders in the world. According to Frontline Defenders, 138 human rights defenders were killed in Colombia during 2021. This is against a background in which, although the Constitution and the high courts in Colombia provide for high standards of protections to human rights, political conflict, organized crime, and corruption has constantly taken journalists and media outlets as victims. What's more, organized crime and paramilitary groups have frequently collaborated with government officials to intimidate, harass, torture, and kill journalists, human rights defenders, and opposition members. And although Colombia is currently implementing a peace agreement between the government and its longest-standing left-wing guerrilla, FARC, several illegal armed groups operate across the country. One of the most serious violations to human rights in Colombia's history was led by the Administrative Department of Security, also known as DAS, the secret police operating in Colombia from 1960 until 2011, when it was closed after the revelation of several acts of illegal surveillance, psychological torture, and killings of journalists, human rights defenders, politicians, and a long list of individuals targeted as enemies of the state. Despite the closure of DAS, scandals about arbitrary and illegal surveillance by the state are constant. One of the most recent cases relates to the profiling conducted by the army, also known as secret dossiers, revealed in 2020. The army conducted massive surveillance of public and private information to create profiles of individuals, including several journalists covering public order and conflict, showing who their contacts, colleagues, and friends are. While the case of the secret dossiers remains without sanctions by disciplinary and judiciary bodies, the interest by the government in conducting surveillance seems to remain intact. In March 2023, Flip revealed that the army has used and is planning to buy software and technology to surveil online activity, particularly through publicly available sources like social media. What Flip's reporting shows is that one of the victims was a journalist who was subject to surveillance after interviewing a guerrilla member.
Thank you. Claudia, as a journalist working on human rights issues in Colombia, you know kind of firsthand what that's like. Could you tell us about your experiences?
So I have been very familiar with these surveillance practices. Since 2001, I have been subject to illegal and arbitrary spying, psychological torture, and the threats following my reporting on the killing of renowned journalist Jaime Garzón, in which I revealed that DAS had staged and implemented a cover-up to achieve impunity to government officials directly involved in ordering, staging, and executing the crime. The harassment endured as I fought to shed light on the crimes against me and as I kept reporting on this and other human rights subjects. In 2003, the government included me into their protection mechanisms for journalists, implemented by DAS officials. This was not the end of the surveillance against me. In fact, the government took advantage of the protection mechanisms provided to me as a tool to violate my rights. Without my consent or knowledge, the bodyguards assigned to me were constantly drafting reports about my activities and conduct. The Constitutional Court in Colombia ruled against this illegal practice in Colombia, clarifying that security mechanisms cannot be used to conduct intelligence activities over the people they are meant to protect. The court also ordered the government to implement appropriate protective measures and to provide me access to information they held about me. Since the government did not comply, I applied for precautionary measures by the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights, which were granted and remain binding to the government since 2009. Following DAS closure in 2011, the government created the National Protection Unit as the agency in charge of protection mechanisms like the one assigned to me. This unit is in charge of risk assessments and implementing mechanisms agreed by an interagency committee. Nevertheless, the precautionary measures by the Inter-American Commission establish that any risk assessment to me must be conducted by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in Colombia. Up until 2022, my protection mechanisms consisted of an armored vehicle that would keep me safe from attacks.
Brilliant, thank you. So what's kind of involved as almost standard in the protection mechanism for journalists normally? Like, what's provided, I guess?
I think it's just life vests, and they can also have cell phones, armored vehicles, and bodyguards. That's basically, but it depends, you know, on the level of risk.
So, also a panic button.
A panic button to alert.
That, according to my investigations,
also has a GPS.
Is also granted with GPS and the possibilities to listen people without their consent.
Yeah.
So it's another mechanism of espionage. And it was improved technologically by the Associated Press years ago, and they confirmed my investigations. But the government is also applying the panic button to all people that could be more dangerous for them than protected.
So what led up to the case currently before the Constitutional Court?
So Claudia was informed in February 2020 that people inside the National Protection Unit were planning to attack her, making use of the registry taken by a GPS device installed in her armored vehicle. And she didn't knew about this device before this day. She filed a complaint before the judiciary authorities and informed the Inter-American Commission about the facts. 1 year later, Claudia was traveling with her daughter to Pereira, a city 7 hours away from Bogotá if reached by car, when one family member received a call from a woman crying and saying that Claudia and her daughter had an accident while on the road, which wasn't true. And no one outside Claudia's family knew about this journey. It was just in August 2021 when Claudia had official confirmation of the existence of a GPS device installed in her vehicle. The National Protection Unit informed the Inter-American Commission that this tool was part of every armored vehicle provided as part of protection mechanisms in order to oversee the bodyguard's compliance to their role and to allow the National Protection Unit to react in case of risk against the life and integrity of the people they are protecting. Claudia had never given her consent or been informed about this device. She filed a request to the National Protection Unit to hand her the information obtained by the GPS device, as well as proof of her consent. Details on who is authorized to receive and use that information, who had received it, and what the legal basis for installing that device was. Claudia also asked for information on how the National Protection Unit was complying with data protection safeguards.
And Claudia, what was that like for you?
The National Protection Unit handed me an Excel file with more than 20,000 records of my movements during 209 days between February and August 2021. This included information on my location, speed, information about where my cell phone was on, off, online, and with its own GPS on. The records included Google Maps links to show my exact location. The GPS had been recording this information every 5 minutes. It was shocking to see how, despite the scale and amount of information recorded with such a device, the National Protection Unit just said that the consent to this type of surveillance was implicit to the acceptance of protective measures, particularly because a use manual of the car included the device. The agency said that they did not have information for previous vehicles assigned to me for different periods of time, but strangely, they had records from October to December 2020. What had happened to the information between December 2020 and February 2021? I can only think that they had manipulated what was handed to me.
The government also handed a copy of their contract with the third party providing the armored vehicles. This document showed that the company had agreed to provide records for at least 2 years per vehicle and that each car can be turned off remotely. On the basis of this answer by the National Protection Unit, Claudia requested the removal of the GPS from the vehicle assigned to her, the handover and deletion of all the information on her movements, and further information on the privacy policy for such a device, as well as a meeting with the Inter-American Commission to reach an agreement on how to put an end to this type of surveillance to individuals under protection by the state.
Just after this, a back and forth with the National Protection Unit started. Given the constant refusal by the agency to remove the GPS from the vehicle, I decided to give back the protection mechanism. The National Protection Unit did not even acknowledge that the collection of information on my location amounted to data processing and kept on raising unclear and insufficient grounds for that kind of surveillance, such as protecting me and programming maintenance to the vehicle. The information that the National Protection Unit giving me gave evidence that the surveillance on vehicles assigned to beneficiaries of that agency is not limited to GPS device. It also includes infrared cameras and fatigue sensor and a sensor with capacity to connect without consent into any device with online access inside the vehicle.
So does that mean that the third party who provided the technology also had access to Claudia's location and like her movements?
Yes. This third party that is collecting the information, since they have the database, they have all the administration of passwords, etc., they have complete access to what's there. And we don't know what the levels of access are inside that company.
And it's just a company? It's not a policing unit? It's not kind of another government agency? Nothing like that?
No, it's a company.
In fact, it could be more than one company because the program is at the same time is like rented to another company. The system is operated by another one. So we really have not reliable information about how many companies and people have access to the information gathered by the GPS.
That's crazy. That's mad. And then, so you mentioned a fatigue sensor. What's a fatigue sensor?
The fatigue sensor is something that, according to them, allows the people that are watching the car to know if the driver in the car is going to sleep or is tired or things like that. I really asked about that very specifically too, but never received a clear response. But it's something like they can get an alarm if the person is asleep.
And then what were the infrared devices for?
The infrared camera lets the people that are watching the car to know how many persons are into the vehicle because they can like measure the heat into the car by person.
And then when you say connect, how do you mean? Like the device that connected with any device with online access, like inside the car. Do you know how much info was gathered that way? How did that work?
Well, we discovered that the car had a system, a central system, like a central computer, that could connect with all the devices that the driver or the persons into the vehicle get. So, for example, my own cell phone, if I had, I don't know, a Wi-Fi device or a drone or whatever connected to internet, a computer, they could get info through the GPS too. And also the GPS can connect to my GPS in the cell phone, even if I have not connected the GPS.
But we actually don't know how much information they collected through that specific device or function.
I mean, the volume of technology is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And as well that, like, you know, that a third-party company could have access to something like that, and such personal and sensitive data that's already, you know, is already concerning enough, it's going to the government. So on the case specifically, would you maybe take us through some of the key arguments, you know, the key things under discussion?
So Claudia was left without the main tool for her protection and therefore with several limitations to her movements. She will not have the same facilities to move from one place to another, to meet with her sources, or to live her ordinary life. For that reason, we decided to file a case against the National Protection Unit using the guardianship action, also known as tutela. The tutela is a relatively simple procedure that can be used to obtain a court order to force public agencies to cease actions or omissions that violate or put at risk fundamental rights. In Claudia's case, we argued that the installation of surveillance devices on Claudia's vehicle violated several of her rights, including her dignity, personal safety, privacy, data protection, freedom of expression, and the particular protections to journalistic freedom granted by the Colombian Constitution. To this, we wanted an order for the National Protection Unit to give her an armored vehicle without tracking devices, as well as an order for the agency to give her all the information collected through GPS or through other devices and to destroy it. We argued that the GPS devices are able to collect an immense amount of information through a long lapse of time and with a high level of detail, although the National Protection Unit argued that this was not personal information. We explained that different human rights bodies like the European Court of Human Rights and the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights have considered that GPS devices oversee the location of movements of individuals and objects, and as such can amount to the collection of personal data and an interference with the right to privacy. Moreover, the data collection law defines personal data as any data that could be connected to an individual. This is pretty obvious in this case, as the National Protection Unit only needed to know which car was assigned to Claudia in order to look into the GPS database. We also argued that information collected through the GPS is sensitive data, as they are likely to cause discrimination on the basis of her activities as a journalist and as a victim of state violence. She, as a journalist in risk, will certainly want to have her movements as confidential. This is a basic guarantee for her safety and for allowing her to meet with sources without fear of being followed. The GPS tracking will allow any individual with access to the database to know about her movements in her professional and personal life, knowing when she leaves to particular places and how much time she spends on each one of them. With a detailed and constant follow-up to this information, it would be even possible to build a profile about her movements. These arguments that we showed to the courts were not entirely new. They were based on the robust data protection law that we have in Colombia and the vast case law of the Constitutional Court on this issue. However, the National Protection Unit stood on their argument and went further.
And how much further was that, Claudia?
Well, the National Protection Unit gave me arguments re-victimizing me and undermining the human rights issues of the case. They claimed that I was conditioning the implementation of the protection scheme to the withdrawal of the GPS, that this device was not collecting any private or confidential information and was necessary for overseeing the proper use of the vehicle. They did not agree in removing the GPS, arguing that if they did so, I would be like using the car as a personal one without any type of oversight, something that, according to them, would leave me at a higher risk. We lost a first and a second instance. While the first instance court said that the only reason for which I am without protection is that I decided to hand the protection mechanism back, the second instance court reasoned that I had agreed to have a device like the GPS at the moment in which I requested protection measures from the government, and that such a device was an inherent part of the vehicle. The case is now at the Constitutional Court, which selected the case for extraordinary review in August 2022. The court has ruled on several cases related to data protection and to protection of journalists since 1991. In fact, judgment in my case in 2008 was a landmark ruling setting some of the principles that are now again being violated by the government. However, technology has changed. The scale of the information that is being gathered through this device is immense, and the possibilities of use by well-trained individuals like the ones who attacked me in the early 20s are unimaginable.
Yeah, completely unimaginable and completely dangerous. So what are you hoping to achieve from this case? What are you hoping the implications will be?
Hopefully, the Constitutional Court will adapt its previous case law into this case. As a basic principle, they should understand that the collection of information related to the location of individuals amounts to the collection of personal data, but they should also take into account that this particular information can trigger particular dangers to people at risk, and especially to journalists victims of violence. The protection mechanism has several flaws, including the late response to requests and the fact that dangers for journalists and human rights defenders prevail and seem to aggravate. In October 2022, one journalist who was under a protection mechanism was killed for reasons related to his work, and at the same time, several corruption scandals in relation to the hiring of bodyguards and vehicles are constantly coming up. The newly appointed chief of the National Protection Unit says he is committed to end with mafias inside the agency and has survived an attempt of killing in the recent weeks.
Yeah, but these are issues that should not leave aside the protection to privacy. Journalists like me and many other individuals rely on confidentiality as part of the protection, not the other way around. The sole fact that corruption reigns inside the National Protection Unit shows that the collection and storage of information can trigger risks to personal integrity and life of many individuals. That's why my filing against the National Protection Unit is not limited to request a ruling of my case, but also requesting for the government to create adequate and transparent policies on the collections of personal data, especially by guaranteeing consent. Colombia remains a place with high risks for many of us. The fact that we are seeking protection shouldn't mean that we are renouncing to our rights.
So how are you both feeling about the case now?
I sometimes feel pessimistic because the case went a bit faster in some stage without, for instance, calling international organizations for submitting amicus briefs, which happens in many controversial or like novel cases. And they also didn't make any request for information to the government or to us, like for further information on the case, which is also strange because, as I mentioned, other cases that are novel or controversial have usually more back and forth between the court and the parties. But this case just has now, since December, a draft judgment, which should be discussed between the three judges of the chamber. And now it's stagnated. They haven't decided on that draft. So we don't know what the discussions are there inside the court. And it's strange that they are maybe having a draft so quickly and at the same time not deciding on it so quickly, right?
I feel very frustrated, honestly, with the case, because for me it's like not possible that after having win in many other instances about my privacy, my protection, the difference between protection and intelligence tax, that after all that I have won, again, I have to fight for my rights. So I am frustrated. And I have decided with my lawyers not to continue assisting to the meetings that they called for. We decided just, you know, to keep breathing information and breathing communications with them, because it's re-victimizing all the time. And it's like a bad joke, honestly. So I feel frustrated and I am not happy. I am trying to resolve my own protection by myself. And I would like not to gain again with the UNP devices and stuff. I just would like not to need that. But the situation is not easy yet, because my case is against many powerful people. Those people are free. And very weak, we have new information about my case, so I cannot be completely sure that nothing is going to happen to me. But the summary is I am frustrated and I'm not wanting to keep more with these people, you know.
Yeah, and maybe I just wanted to add on that frustration that maybe for the two of us who have been involved in this and who have studied the subject, it's pretty clear that this is an invasion to privacy, that there is a collection of information by the government. And if they are going to make it, it should have some safeguards. And the basic one should be consent. But somehow, when we are talking with the government, it looks like we are the ones who are wrong and who are crazy and who don't have the international law and the constitutional law behind us. So that's even more frustrating, because it's just like somehow of legal gaslighting of the of the issue, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
And Claudia, like, how do you find the bravery to keep working when your life and your family's life are under such significant and direct threat?
I don't know. I make that question every day to myself, and sometimes I just don't want to continue it. And other times I just respond saying that if I don't keep fighting, I will be like an accomplice with these people. Like with my silence, I will let them to do what they want to do. So I prefer to keep fighting, but it's not because I am a brave person or because I'm an extraordinary journalist, just because as a person, I feel I need to not let these people to do what they want. And is that, but any day is difficult, and any day is more complicated to conduct my work, of course. So For the last month, I have been working basically under low profile, and I am feeling always afraid to high profile when my research is publicated or whatever. So sometimes I prefer not to publish my name and things like that. But yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you're both incredibly impressive, and I think the work that you've done and you're continuing to doing and the potential this case has for other human rights defenders is just awesome. Thank you both so much for speaking with us today. And yeah, we really hope the case goes well. And yeah, wishing you all the best and all the kind of safety that we can. Thank you guys.
I'm so grateful that we have this opportunity to talk about this stuff.
I think she's an incredibly impressive woman.
Yeah.
What's amazing, I think, about her is she's had all these direct threats to life. And part of the problem with the GPS is, beyond the fact that it's been used as part of those threats to her life, is that she's still doing journalistic investigation. She's an active journalist. She's still working in this. She's still meeting sources. She's still contacting sources. She's still producing, like, those investigations and doing that work. So the GPS doesn't just create a new threat to her life and a new threat to her privacy and that she hasn't consented to, but it also threatens those sources and that work she's still doing. I cannot conceive, I think, of the bravery to experience all that and then keep going, you know, and not retreat and say, okay, well, maybe the journalistic endeavor is too scary.
And like, it's not just that she goes back to work every day, but she also takes this case. She also calls it into question. Often it's like when you receive a service from the state, it's like, be grateful. Don't question us. But yeah, the bravery is on so many levels.
Yeah. And Lara, like, what are the implications of this case? What do you think could happen, you know, if she wins, if she loses?
Claudia is one of the many human rights defenders who benefit from protective measures from the National Protection Unit. And this case could have massive ripple effects in the measures benefited by other human rights defenders who may have similar concerns. And obviously, depending on the outcome, these ripple effects could be positive or negative.
What do you think it means in a broader sense? So, you know, it could have very specific implications in Colombia because that's where the National Protection Unit is and that's who it defends. But what do you think it means beyond Colombia?
Well, this comes back to something that we keep asserting as PI, and it's that the way to hell can be paved with good intentions. Sometimes organizations might collect data because they mean to do good. And here I'm trusting that the arguments used by the National Protection Unit are made in good faith, that they are collecting this data because they think it's reasonably necessary for Claudia's protection. So taking that as a starting point, this case is important to show that sometimes, even when we mean well, things can go wrong. And this is one of the reasons why people should be extra careful about their data. You don't need to have a bad faith actor for things to go terribly wrong.
There's that old, too often repeated adage that who's going to watch the watchers? But in this case, it's like, who's going to watch the protectors? It's such a meta type of challenge. And I'm curious if you can translate it beyond just this context and towards, you know, what our listeners and PI's work beyond should be considering.
I'm going to go ahead and say that we are a means to an end as an organization in the same way that privacy is a gateway right and a means to an end. Here, privacy is useful not just for the sake of privacy, but because it allows these very important people to carry out their work unhindered in complete safety. And when we don't allow that to happen, when these individuals don't get the privacy they deserve, we're not just putting their lives at risk, which in itself is bad enough, but we're also putting their work at risk, which could help, for instance, in this specific case, a country like Colombia grapple with its armed conflict history and to be better equipped to carry on this transitional justice process that has very serious implications for everyone involved, for the Colombian civil society at large.
I think that's the thing that we say about if PI is the vehicle through which we're trying to achieve a better society, and privacy is the means through which we try and protect and ensure all of the human rights that we believe are important. Like, it's why, you know, the Privacy Matters series exists, because it goes through all of the human rights and says, but privacy is fundamental to how we experience the world and to how these rights are defended as well. Like, because I think, you know, for PI, privacy is the thing that stands between people and the state, between people and corporations, and lets people be people. And
you put it perfectly, and it explains why, whether it's on this podcast or whether it's in the work we do, we're not privacy puritanicals, because we believe that privacy is pure. We know the world that exists in all of its color and vibrancy and its darkness, and we want to make sure people can be safe and secure and enjoy their lives in the world that is. And just to add my own color to that, I actually worry that Colombia is not a unique case study. In today's world, Colombia is not a unique country with a unique setting. But I also think in tomorrow's world, we run the risk of many places and many more places facing the challenges that Colombia has faced over the last 20 to 30 years and facing the challenges that Claudia faces today. And that's why this work is just so important for the future. So with that, where do we go from here? What's next?
In terms of what we're going to do, we're obviously going to continue to monitor the case and any other instances of surveillance emerging from Colombia, although our partners are already doing a fantastic job of doing that. And also importantly, there is a case currently being considered by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights on the surveillance of human rights defenders in Colombia. And this is a case that we've been involved in. So alongside EFF, Article 19, and Fundación Carisma, represented by Berkeley Law's International Human Rights Law Clinic, we submitted an intervention urging the Inter-American Court to rule that Colombia's existing legal framework regulating intelligence activities is not compatible with the convention, that is the American Convention on Human Rights. That ruling is yet to come out, and we want to see how the ruling in Claudia's case, whether it comes out before or after the Inter-American Court's ruling, integrates with this ruling, which will have regional consequences.
You're a lawyer. You're from the region. What I always found fascinating when I speak to advocates from Latin America is that there is a faith in courts being able to intervene. And my understanding of Colombian history is that the Supreme Court has been key, including in essentially calling for the shutdown of the intelligence agency at one point because of wide-scale surveillance abuses. We've never seen other courts take such brave steps. So this type of work before courts, it matters. I ask a lawyer who's going to, of course, nod and say, yes, of course. But I'm curious, with your experience, Laura, does that match?
Yes, it matters. And I think I'm not the only one to have faith in the courts, not just to grapple with these difficult issues, but to come up with solutions that are fit for purpose in our continent, you know, that fit the experiences that we've had, not just as civil society, but also institutionally. Latin America is a continent that has gone through a lot of dictatorships, a lot of mass human rights abuses, and courts such as the Inter-American Court of Human Rights have been instrumental in grappling with that past. And for instance, something that is really unique to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, if you take a step back and look at regional or international human rights mechanisms, is that they haven't shied away from ordering guarantees of non-repetition, which allow countries to fundamentally restructure their entities, including entities that have often been responsible for mass human rights violations, such as the police or the armed forces. And the Inter-American Court of Human Rights has the power to order these measures, and they do it every single time they can. They will come up with measures that will allow organizations to fundamentally change, which itself plays a key role in changing, almost recasting the relationship that civil society has with these organizations that have been guilty of so many human rights violations in the past. So yes, there is definitely hope for the Inter-American Court to come up with a ruling that will fit the challenge and that will enable other civil society members, other organizations to look for justice.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can tell us what you think of the podcast by visiting us at pvcy.org/tpsurvey. You can sign up to be the first to learn more about our work at pvcy.org/podsignup. And we'll include some links to relevant articles and information in the description wherever you're listening or on our website at pvcy.org/techpill. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you use. Music courtesy of Sepia. This podcast was produced by Max Burnell for Privacy International.